Today, Wanted, the Sensible Centre. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, working on the latest post covering finance and prop news with a distinctively Australian flavour. Today, I'm joined again by Tarek Brooker. Hello.
G'day, Martin. How are you, mate?
Pretty good. Happy New Year.
Thank you. Same to you.
So, as a journalist, have you been on air or off air over the last few days?
Well, most of my editors have all been on holiday since just before Christmas, so I haven't really had much to do in that respect. Nothing. I've been writing a lot of articles, but there's no one to send them to, you know, up until today. So everyone's back to work. So you'll see a little bit more from me in the coming days.
Okay, very good. But of course, it's been a very, very chaotic couple of weeks out of Christmas with the bushfires and all of the things around there. So I thought it would be worth reflecting on some of the things that you've seen and observed as developments have taken place. And I think last time we spoke, ScoMo was in Hawaii.
Yeah. Oh, good old ScoMo, always to be relied upon. Now, it's actually quite interesting just how things have evolved since then. I mean, in our previous discussion, I was saying that I thought that he was sort of, you know, the man of titanium, you know, Teflon ScoMo. But I think, you know, we may have misread it. You know, we people are out there are really, really angry, and that anger doesn't really seem to be going away.
Well, it seems to be that, you know, one step in the wrong direction you might forgive, but it seems to me that there have been a number of steps and you're just standing there scratching your head thinking, you did what?
It's all a little bit George W. Bush, really. You know, whether it's, you know, everyone always was just watching the news thinking, what did he just say? He just seems to just lurch from one train wreck to another. I spoke to a few people about this on Twitter, you know, fellow journalists and other people, and no one really seems to know what the score is, because he just seems to lurch from one train wreck to another, to another, to another. And I mean, I think it was pretty clear during the election campaign that he has some very intelligent people in his team. He wouldn't have got re-elected if he didn't. But what happened to all those people? Where are they now? Or is it all just ScoMo's captain's calls?
Well, I wonder whether there's something between marketing and reality. Because, of course, he does come from a marketing spin positioning background. And my feeling is that in the normal course of events, you know, a normal political day, you can probably get away with that. But when you've got a series of very significant and worrying issues that need deeper thought and, you know, the right decisions being taken and the right actions being demonstrated, you can't cover it up with marketing spin.
No, and that's what I think is really interesting about how things have developed here. He had a real opportunity to make this a great moment for him, to put his stamp on it, to be like Howard after Port Arthur or Gillard after the Queensland floods, and people felt a real, real appreciation. I mean, it may sound a little bit crass now, but looking at things purely from a political perspective, disasters are usually where leaders are allowed to be vulnerable, allowed to be to connect with the public on a really meaningful level and to provide people some very, very real assistance and very real help. But rather than doing that and rather than being seen to be there, he's just sort of done this weird marketing thing where he just sort of tries to manage it rather than just being actually involved in the day-to-day operations.
Yeah, it's very interesting because I felt very strongly that there was real humanity coming through from the premiers of Victoria and New South Wales over the last few days. You know, they'd rock up for those regular review conferences and seem to me to be quite open and transparent about what was going on and very little spin. And you contrast that with ScoMo's appearances, even the last one, which was really, it felt as though it was managed and, you know, the journo sort of asked the right questions, but he really didn't give the right answers.
No, and it may sound kind of funny, like people have this thing that they like to call resting bitch face, where someone just constantly looks miserable or angry. And ScoMo has what I like to call resting smug face. Whereby if you take a random picture of him, he's just standing there looking all smug and superior. And it's just, it's not a good look. I mean, I understand that might be his natural setting, but it's something that you really have to try carefully to override as a politician, because you need to be seen as someone who's, you know, you're feeling the emotion of these people. I mean, you look at Gladys Berejiklian, for example, who has admittedly made a lot of mistakes since this began, but you look at her and you see in her face, you know, you see her connecting with people suffering. And then you've got ScoMo standing there, crossed arms, looking smug. And it just, it's not a good look for someone who's a marketing man, especially.
Yeah. Well, empathy, I think, is the key, because I think people want, you know, not people sort of standing above them, but standing with them. And essentially also really listening and understanding what's really going on. And that's the other thing that I didn't really see a lot of, and that was real listening.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you look at some of the state and federal MPs in these affected areas, they are getting some of the most glowing reviews from their constituents. Mm. You know, I think it was Andrew Constance going around with all the local residents. He'd been up for days, driving around in a ute with a water tank on the back, putting out spot fires, helping the fireys, and just doing what you really do expect from your local member. Getting out there and helping and connecting and providing for these people. I mean, you don't need to get out there and hold a hose. You can get out there, you can run a food bank, you can do a sausage sizzle, you can, you know, raise money in your local area for the firefighters or the victims. There are so many different things you can do that should be bread and butter PR, but they're just not doing it. And I mean, a lot of liberals and a lot of people, they're just not realizing this. I suppose it's because they're still in holiday mode. A lot of them only just got back, you know, in the last few days.
Well, it's interesting, of course, as Tony Abbott was actually out on the fiery front line, wasn't he?
Yeah, and that's the interesting thing with Abbott. People may not like him. They may not like his politics. They may not like his ideology, but you can connect with him as a person. You know, you can look at him and you can go, that's an Aussie bloke. That's just a regular Aussie person who's getting out there. I mean, it's like during the 2013 fires, you know, even when he was PM, you know, he was out there, you know, with his unit doing his thing because, you know, he felt like that's where he belonged. And ironically, I think he actually copped a little bit of unfair criticism for that in the end.
Yeah, it's very interesting, isn't it? So I guess the sort of question then is, how does this play out ahead? I guess there are two dimensions to it. The first is, economically speaking, it looks to me as though this is going to create some additional challenges for the local economy here. And I guess part of that is to do with household confidence and, you know, what they're going to do. And plus, of course, all the, you know, repair and remediation once the fires are easing. But of course, the fires are not going to ease for some time. So that's the sort of the other angle. And then we've got the political aspect of it, which is how this plays out in terms of, you know, ScoMo and the party in power. So what's your reading on those two issues?
Well, starting with the issue of the economy, normally natural disasters are relatively short-run affairs. They occur over a period of days or a period of maybe a couple of weeks. You know, a little bit longer than that in terms of the aftermath, etc. But they're usually something that happens very quickly and then it's gone and then you deal with the aftermath. But the difference with this compared to, say, like the Queensland floods, which occurred over a period of maybe a couple of weeks, which, you know, I think ended up taking something like 1.2% off GDP for the affected quarter, is this is going to keep going for months. The people I talk to in the fire services, they say, well, we are not even at the hottest part of summer yet. This is going to keep going and it's going to, and, you know, I mean, we hope it's going to rain. We hope that maybe even the drought will break. But at the moment, it's not looking like that's going to happen. And when we hit, like, you know, February or the kids go back to school, you know, you've got those 30, 35, 40 degree days, you know, with some winds, it's going to be absolutely horrible out there for them. But as sort of for the political side of things, I think it's really going to depend on the polls when they go back, because, you know, News Poll doesn't really do any polling between sort of the second week of December and usually the last week of January, unless it's an election year, which it's not. So we don't really have a read on the public. You know, we've got public opinion. We've got a poll done by A Current Affair on Facebook. 82% of Australians who voted said that they disapprove of the way ScoMo is handling things. And, well, for a Facebook page that tends to lean fairly heavily to the right, that's not a really a fantastic outcome for him. But when we start see these polls coming in from Essential, from News Poll, from Galaxy and YouGov, you know, in a couple of weeks' time, we're really going to start to get like a read on this, because if these are polls are really, really poor, ScoMo could be finished. I mean, despite what I said a few weeks ago, if these are really, really bad, it's not going to matter, you know, because he may be, you know, this could be his Katrina and that could be it for him. You know, while I still think that's an unlikely outcome and I, you know, I'd like to sort of meet my expectations, it's still a possibility. And I talk, everyone I talk to, it doesn't matter where they're from, they are angry. I mean, I was talking to a mate about this the other day, and apparently as far afield as Iran, taxi drivers there are talking about how poorly Scott Morrison is handling this. You know, it's gone global.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because I quite often listen to the BBC because, of course, I come from the UK. And they've had quite a lot of coverage of Australia over there. And they have been extremely negative on ScoMo. I mean, it's amazing that, you know, around the world, people seem to be talking about this. And I don't know whether you saw Flanagan's recent article in the New York Times, but he, you know, novelist, he was basically linking what's going on at the moment with Chernobyl and the fall of the USSR back then.
Well, I suppose in a way, I mean, you know, this could really be, you know, a massive watershed moment for Australia. I mean, it clearly is in terms of climate change. You know, you finally got the Prime Minister coming out and saying, this is climate change is an issue. We're not ignoring it. We haven't underestimated it. Well, one, yes, you have. And two, even if you talk to people from a wide cross section of the political spectrum about climate change, very few people doubt that it's changing. They doubt it for the reasons that it's changing. And for that reason, I think it's quite silly on the part of the Prime Minister to not do something major about this, not turn around and go, well, okay, I'm not sure about this emissions thing, but we should really be improving our water infrastructure or our power infrastructure or helping drought-proof more parts of Australia or helping to ensure that these type of bushfires don't happen. You know, there's all these different things that can happen, even within the confines of Scott Morrison and Josh Frydenberg's ideology, that aren't happening. And I think that's something that's really affecting a lot of people, even Liberal voters. A lot of people I've spoken to are very, very disappointed because it's like, look, we don't say that it's not changing. We don't say that there's not a drought. You know, we just say, okay, well, maybe the emissions thing isn't the answer, but we think that this might be. And they're just not really doing anything.
Well, John Adams and I released a post today where we discussed one of the, if you like, alternative theories that actually a lot of the fires are related to the poor bush management that we now have in Australia. And we've got a lot more fuel because, you know, people aren't actually tarring up the bush like they used to. And people actually have been for some time, you know, recalling that the Aboriginal communities know much more about how to manage bush over the long term. And in fact, there's maybe 20 times more fuel in the bush than there used to be. So there are, you know, narratives that could be used to help effectively take the argument forward without necessarily saying, yeah, climate change is all about fossil fuels and carbon, et cetera, et cetera. You know, but none of those debates and none of those conversations seem to be having. And I understand the momentum is also about fixing what's gone wrong, but I think people have not are not prepared to walk away from the broader, more strategic questions which this represents.
Yeah, I agree. And I think one of the key things about the entire climate change debate is in the last 12 to 18 months in particular, it's really become politicized. You know, you've got the left saying, we need to do this, we've got 12 years, we need to do this. And then it gets and then unfortunately what's happened is it's got linked in with all these other various different left-wing ideologies. And the right has done the exact same thing. While this is something that's done by a relatively few number of people, it's what the media runs with, unfortunately. And I think what we need to do is we need to depoliticize climate change. We need to sit down as if we were planning a war or as if we were planning a full-blown national crisis, because that's what this is. And we should just go, okay, what is the most efficient way that we can fix this? What is the most efficient way that we can mitigate this and protect our people and protect our economy and basically be able to get on with our lives without climate change screwing everything up? And that's what needs to happen. But unfortunately, what is happening is people are just going around scoring political points And that's really great. And we can all score political points until the planet burns, but it's not really going to accomplish anything.
And isn't there a point about the purpose of the Australian government is to protect its people and to protect its communities? Isn't that what it's there for?
Well, exactly. I mean, and that's one thing that I find just massively frustrating about this. You know, Scott Morrison spent $250 million on outfitting, what did he call it, Shark One, his new big Air Force One-esque plane for himself. You know, for that amount of money, we could have had 10 full-size 737 water bombers, ours to keep forever. And the one that we own, that's owned by the New South Wales Rural Fire Service, has been making an absolutely pivotal difference. But all we can find is an additional $20 million for 4 water bombers. 4. And fires are burning from southern WA all the way up into Queensland, all the way along the coast and in the interior. And we have 4. So the one of the fire chiefs was saying the other day that when he was in America, they had 30, including a full-size 747 dropping fire retardant on the flames. Why don't we have 30? Our fire is literally 31 times bigger than theirs, and we have fewer aircraft. How does that in any way make sense? Sorry about that. I'm getting a little bit frustrated, but, you know.
No, I think it's important because, you know, inaction or lack of the right action is really coming home to roost now. But what do you think it means for the surplus? Do you think that the surplus is now at risk of $5 billion rather than $7 billion because of what they said at MIFO? You think they're going to hold to the surplus?
Honestly, I don't know, to be completely frank, because when I looked at last year's numbers, I was like, well, only $700 million deficit. How did this happen? And then I looked and I found the $4.5 billion of cuts to the NDIS. So I don't know exactly what sort of sneaky thing that they're going to pull again this time. It's going to, you know, pull another $4.5 billion out of some other sort of project. But more broadly, if you look at all the sort of, you know, things that are going on in terms of economic activity, you know, tourism is already down 10% in Sydney, according to a report from Reuters. That was last year. And obviously, even today on the Golden Globes, everyone was talking about the fires here. I've heard from a flight attendant saying that people in the US are saying, oh, no, I'm not going to go to Australia anymore. I've heard from people from Asia, they're all cancelling their holidays and stuff here. It's going to hit tourism like an absolute truck. You know, you've got people thinking, oh, I'm going to go to Kangaroo Island because it's the most beautiful koala preserve on the face of the earth. But it's like, I can't go because it's on fire, you know, or a good portion of the tourist infrastructure has been burned to a crisp. And you look at all these different things that have been destroyed, all these different things that have been affected. Like just today, a ski resort in the Snowy Mountains was destroyed. You know, that's probably not going to be rebuilt in time for the ski season. All these various different things are all going to come together to hit the surplus very, very, very hard. And to be honest, you know, I mean, I don't think we have sufficient data to adequately comment on that at the moment in terms of exactly where, you know, the chips are going to fall. But it's clearly going to hit it hard. And not only that, but these disaster relief efforts cost, I mean, not to put too fine a point on it, but they cost a lot of money. You know, I mean, getting all these reservists out costs like something, you know, millions and millions of dollars every month, you know, and when do the fires end? You know, I mean, the fire season now is going to last for another 4 or 5 months before it's finally over. It's just, who knows? You know, I mean, and not only that, but the federal government has made an open-ended commitment to pay for whatever the Defence Force needs, and whatever if the states go, okay, well, we need this many reservists, we need this many ships, this many helicopters and trucks, the federal government have to be like, well, all right, you know, and that how much is that going to cost over the coming months? Who knows?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I did a quick calculation over the last couple of days based off the information around the Victorian Black Saturday fires, right, which was costed, I think, out at more than $4 billion a few years ago. If you adjust that for current prices, that's nearer to $6 billion, and that's 1/6 the size of the areas currently burnt out this time around. So you're getting up towards $30 billion before you even start.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm really quite concerned on exactly how this is going to impact consumers, households, because, you know, consumer confidence in terms of, I was looking at the ANZ index, for the forward-looking five-year economic conditions index, you're looking at it, it's at its lowest level in more than a decade in terms of the rolling four-week average. And that hardly bodes well when everyone is currently losing faith in our leadership and looking at them and going, oh, yeah, this bloke, he's no good. He's no good. You know, and I don't really know how that's going to play out in the long term, because I don't think we've ever really had someone where we've lost so much faith in their leadership to the point where it's affecting how we spend, how we go about our lives, how we make our decisions.
Mm. Well, I'm pretty sure the Reserve Bank will be cutting rates in February. They were probably going to anyway, but, you know, it's about the only lever they've got left. But, you know, to my mind, the sums really aren't adding up very well at the moment. And I just can't really see how we can avoid significant economic pain over the next, not just few months, but over the next 2 to 3 years, which will take us through the next election cycle. So this could have quite profound implications for not only the communities here, but also for the political environment in Australia into the next decade.
Yeah, I completely agree. And that's one of the things I honestly find most concerning about all of this going forward, not just because of the fires and not just because of the economy, but because of how polarized things are becoming. You know, you're seeing, you know, certain media figures who I won't name because I don't want to get sued, who are getting out there and they're defending the Prime Minister to the absolute hilt, regardless of how badly he screws up. And we're seeing, you know, the gradual Americanization of our political landscape to the point where, you know, the Prime Minister can do no wrong. There's always a counter narrative, rather than just saying, oh, yeah, look, hand up, I stuffed up. You know, but, you know, ScoMo never knows how to say sorry by the looks of things. But I just don't see how sort of we reverse this political polarization in Australia. And the reality is it's happening around the world. You know, it's all, you know, whenever something bad comes out, you know, Boris Johnson or whoever it is, you know, they say fake news, regardless of whether it's fake news or not. And I can't see that being good for the ongoing sort of political discourse in this country that was already getting a little bit heated as it is, no pun intended.
Yeah, well, you know, I think it comes back to the question of trust. And, you know, I look at surveys around the world and people's trust of the political environment or economic environment has never been lower. And the polarization that you talk about is part of it, because you're almost being forced as individuals to sort of go over there or over there. But what about the middle ground? Surely, you know, in a civilized Western society, we should be looking for middle ground, and we should be looking for an accommodation of that area, because that is surely where we should be building the future from.
Well, that's especially true here in Australia. You know, unlike, say, the UK or the US that don't have compulsory voting, you know, you can see these big ideological swings to the left and swings to the right over time because people don't have to vote. But in Australia, it's always, always about the middle, because if you don't win the middle, you can't win an election. And right now, there's not really that appeal going on to the middle. No one, while Labor, I think, did a good job articulating a lot of the problems with Australia, they didn't really offer solutions that were significantly appealing to middle Australia and were able to override the fears of change and concern that a lot of people have about their future, especially because they looked around Australia in May last year and they saw, you know, shops slowly being closed. They heard about people losing jobs. You know, private sector jobs growth was absolutely abysmal around about then. And they were concerned. And that's why Scott Morrison got reelected. But what we need is someone, like, I mean, I don't really care who it is. You know, if Scott Morrison wants to come out tomorrow and he wants to say, oh, we're going to fix middle Australia, good luck, Scotty. But, or if it's Albo, or if it's Pauline or Jackie or whoever wants to do it. But you're right, that's exactly what needs to happen.
Mm. And don't you think that ScoMo got in because of Palmer?
Palmer, I think played a significant role. I think people look at it and they go, oh, you know, ScoMo won a majority. It's like, yes, he won a majority. But what you need to realize is how close run this was. If you look at the number of marginal seats, won by, you know, 1%, 1.5%, you know, it easily could have turned into a shortened victory, albeit not a pretty shortened victory or a shortened minority government, but it could have happened. And I think a lot of people read too much into Morrison's victory. Yes, he took a bad position and he made a victory. Good luck to him. You know, very impressive. He's going to be considered a legend in the Liberal Party for years to come. But in terms of actually really winning people over, that didn't happen. This isn't an overwhelming victory like Abbott's back in 2013 or Rudd's in 2007. This is scraping through by the skin of your teeth because Labor made an absolute mess of things in during the campaign.
So then a plea to find the centre.
Yeah, but basically that's what needs to happen. I mean, we need to look at things. We need to look at the economy and look at all these different various issues that we're having and say, what's actually going on? Let's stop the spin. Let's stop with saying everything's fine and she'll be right, mate, when it's very, very clear, especially now with these fires, that it's not.
Sounds like leadership is required.
Leadership, yeah. No, that's exactly right. Leadership is most certainly required, and I think it's just about holding our politicians accountable for what they do for us, for middle Australia, for just Australia in general. Because for too long now we have been suffering from just inaction, you know, from insufficient infrastructure being built, from all these various different things. You know, you hear all these stories from all across Australia, you know, of people dying or people not having enough. And we are a wealthy enough country that shouldn't be happening.
Yeah, well, you know, there is a channel called In the Interest of the People. It was named that for a very good reason, because politicians are not there for their own ends. They're there for our ends. It's worth remembering.
Oh, absolutely. I'm a big, big believer, subscriber.
Tarek, I really enjoyed speaking with you once again, and we'll compare notes down the track, I think, in a few more weeks.
Yeah, definitely. Sounds great, Martin.
Good to talk to you. Cheers. Bye.
Bye, mate.